once you're at a certain physicality and a certain endurance and a certain fitness, these races are all emotional, right? And not just personally emotional, but relationship emotional. It's like, how can you spend your relationship collateral, your sleep collateral, your emotional collateral in the right ways to continue moving forward when your whole brain at some point is saying like, we're done.
Welcome to the Low Tide Boys, a swim run podcast. I'm Chip.
And I'm Chris. And this is episode 147 of the show. On this week's show, we have the third installment of our four-part series recapping the inaugural One Water Race. Joining us on this episode is the entire Team 3 USA, aka Ben Racing. This is, we never had so many people on one podcast.
We're record setting for guests.
So we're here for it, but just so you know, there's a lot of people here. So we try to call people out to make sure you know who's talking. But joining us are team captain Jason Magnus, Tim Dorbald, Renee Metvier, and Chris Wright. Folks in adventure racing circles definitely know, have heard of Ben Racing. I mean, they're pretty legendary. But it was cool for us to chat with them about their race experience. And really, like, I learned a ton on just like what it takes to prepare.
Yeah. And I think first, training updates.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Yeah. Save it.
Save it for the end. Well, our 2022 swim run season is almost over, but not before going out with a couple bangs and a couple of yeehaws.
Yeah.
So the Low Tide Boys will be at Odyssey Swim Run Austin in just 2 weeks. We're doing some training, air quotes, but mostly trying to keep things steady until race day.
Yeah.
I did some a training camp, an intensive 3-day training camp, because I felt like Utsala, I needed more time on my feet.
Yeah.
We talked about this, right? So yeah. My training camp, I went to Disneyland with the kids, and the wife came along as well.
What was the step count?
It was up there. It was like 15,000-20,000 a day.
Damn,
my dogs were barking for sure. So I was like, this is good for Utsala next year, if it happens.
I love it. Yeah.
That's training update.
And honestly, like, I love swim run. I mean, I love it.
Yeah.
But I'm also kind of like, I'm ready for a break. It's been a lot of racing this year.
It's a lot of racing. We've been active and very much looking forward to the final race, Odyssey, at Paceman Park. Now for this week's shout outs.
Yeah. So our shout out this week goes to friend of the pod and previous guest, Rick Mann. He recently suffered a heart attack during a training ride a few weeks ago, and like, he let us know about it, and you know, our thoughts are with him and his family as he continues to recover, which actually appears to be going pretty great since he's already crushing monster swims in the Atlantic Ocean like he just normally does. So it looks like
right,
he's doing great,
it, yeah.
But I mean, seriously, we love you, Rick. Hope you're recovering and just taking care of yourself, because we need you. We need you posting those.
Yeah, and he was bummed things. Because he was also going to come out to Odyssey Austin, but he's taking his doctor's orders and forgoing this one. But his partner, Chris, will be out. So
she better.
She might be looking for a partner even.
Oh.
So maybe we can make that happen. But, you know, we'll leave the real matchmaking to Nicholas Ramirez over at Omble. Now, for this week's feats of endurance, this week's winner is Glenn Wilco. He finished the Oceania Adventure Race on the Gold Coast of Australia over the weekend, and it definitely looked like a feat of endurance. It took him and his team 25 and a half hours to complete the 114-mile course with over 19,000 feet of elevation gain.
Yeah.
Nice job, Glenn. Strong work.
Yeah, when I saw this on Strava, I had to like learn more, because I was like, wait, what?
It's like, what watch can last for 25 hours? We know it's probably some with some serious ultra endurance mode.
Definitely.
Also, bonus shout out to our friend Danny, as he's known in some circles, the Monster, the Divinator. He finished 12th overall out of 2,900 participants at Ironman California in Sacramento, California. So he continues to live up to his nickname, the Monster.
Yeah.
The dude, he's an animal. He's a monster. There's no other way to put
it. He's the monster.
And we try to train with him. Sometimes it's an impossibility.
Yeah.
But he just does these. He's the monster. I don't know what else to say, but congratulations. I know this race for him it got canceled last year, and the year before that was COVID. So it was many years coming. Very happy, and congratulations on that one, Danny.
Definitely.
You probably saw that if you were over in the Low Tide Boys Strava Club. So just head on over to Strava, search Low Tide Boys, and join all the fun over there. It's people training for stuff. stuff they do in life. I thought about almost putting my one Disneyland day on Strava,
just to see
what it would look like, but I didn't do it.
Probably a good thing.
Yeah. It's like, probably don't need that. Anyway, Chris, how's it going over the news desk for this week in Swim Run?
All right. Well, we've got a short one for everyone this week. And it's this week in Swim Run and also like a couple weeks ago in Swim Run.
Recently in Swim Run.
Attila Khan is in the books and the conditions were a repeat of last year, i.e. awesome. Congrats to Hugo and Max for keeping their season win streak alive as they head to the last race of the year on the island of Malta in just a few weeks. Speaking of Khan, make sure you check out the race film by our friend Rasmus on YouTube, which was just released.
Link in the show notes.
Released this week and it was good. It was real good.
Another man is a marvel.
He's great.
Marvel.
He's great. He's the best. The week after Cannes, the sixth edition of the Swim Run Côte d'Azur took place up the coastline a bit in France. And the race conditions looked amazing. And we love that they have three distance options that make the event like super welcoming and as inclusive as can be. And we were dreaming about flying out to do both races back to back in the near future. I've been tossing this over to Chipper's side of the garage a couple times. Hey, we could go do Cannes and then just have a family vacation.
It's a way to wrap up the season right there.
South of France, you know, go to Nice, which is nice. Anyway.
I like that.
That happened. Anyway, that's it for this week. Feel free to reach out and let us know if there's anything that you'd like for us to mention on the show.
Yes, now for a little show business. So if you're enjoying the Low Tide Boys at Odyssey Austin in November 6th in Pace Bend Park in Austin, Texas, be sure to join us for the Low Tide Boys, Team Adorkables, Wild Swim Run Collab, Shakeout Swim Run, and Fika. It's going to be on Saturday, November 5th at 11 a.m. at Camp Tex Lake. Now that's where you're going to go to packet pickup. That starts at 1 p.m. So we're starting at 11. We're going to do about 45 minutes to 60 minutes, really chill running and swim running. So come out with all your gear questions and all that good stuff. We'll get a look at a little bit of the course, some of the swims. Very easy, no drop, open to everybody. So we can't wait to see everybody there. And then after that, we're going to have a little bit of a fika, so a little some pastry and other delightful, delectable things to nom on after. This is a very special shakeout, though. We love hosting these shakeouts. We get such great feedback, and it's really great for us to meet and great members of this community. But this one's extra special. We have multiple guests from across the pond in the UK. Special guests are joining us for this shakeout swim run. Our team, Mr. and Mrs. B, Bill and Chrissy, as well as Alex, who are all flying from the UK for the race in Texas. So we'll see you out there for the shakeout swim run, 11 a.m. at Camp Tex Lake on November 5th. Well, without any further ado, let's get into our conversation with One Water Race Team Number 3, USA, Ben Racing.
So as we were saying at the beginning of the show, it was really great to get Team 3's race report. As we mentioned, you know, Ben Racing is just like legendary in the adventure racing world. And we really learned why. I mean, in this conversation, we spoke about how they got their team together, how they approached training and got a real detailed race report about their experience on the archipelago. There's also an emotional conversation because, you know, no one likes to talk about DNFs, but we loved their candor and humility. And honestly, I mean, I was like impressed by how they came together as a team. And to me, like, I mean, a lot of reasons why this episode is just awesome.
Yeah. And including like the very gut-wrenching end and how they resulted. And it's, we don't want to spoil it, but it was, you just nothing, but you just feel for them. Tough.
Yeah. You know, and I think
up effort.
Totally agree. And I think, I don't want to spoil it for anyone either, but I would say like, if anything, the way they bonded as a team and the way they made their decision at the end, like just shows like, how much they cared about each other and how, you know, if you had to put this in a vacuum and find some equanimity and make a decision, like they definitely made the right decision for the team. And it was anyway, it's great.
Yeah. And it's another, you know, this is our third one of this thing. And the thread I'm seeing is the memories that were made during this really insane block of swim run time that they were doing are going to last with them forever. And that's like the theme that we're seeing throughout all these yeah. different chats on that we've been having. So it's just really cool. But
yeah, I mean, I still don't want to do the race.
No,
but
not at all.
You know,
I appreciate it. And it's epic. No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Capital E.
Yes. Capital E. So we're going to head up right from Studio G, take the I-5 up.
Yeah.
Right into Central Oregon. It's way quicker. Blast up. Say hi to our folks at Bend Racing for the One Water Race Recap Part 3. Team USA. Bend Racing.
All right, very excited for part 2 of our 4-part One Water Race Recap Extravaganza. With us, we have USA Team 3, which is Jason, Chris, Renee, and Timothy. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks. Guys.
Thanks.
So we're super stoked to have you. This is the first time we've had so many people in one recording, so we'll see how it goes, but I think it's going to be amazing. First of all, congrats on even thinking that signing up for One Water Race was going to be like a thing, because this race was a beast. So I'd love to hear from you guys. Whose idea was it to sign up? How did you guys get sort of into the
roped
team?
Into it?
Yeah, roped into it or otherwise, but would love to hear how this whole thing started.
Jason, do you want to start?
I think every single one of us is going to say Jason.
Okay, Jason, you're up. Popcorn, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, ironically, it was my idea, and I was the one that didn't end up swimming. But so there's some fun stories there. But basically, I'm a longtime expedition adventure racer. And, you know, this little trailer just popped up on Facebook. And I'd done I was a swimmer through college, and a triathlete formerly. And then, you know, mostly turned longtime expedition adventure racer, expedition paddler. And this thing popped up. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, the only people that are going to survive this are either like world champion swim runners or expedition adventure racers. And certainly not a world champion swim runner. I'd never done a swim run. But you know, I was just taken by the whole idea. And so I actually initially, you know, signed up, or not signed up, but put in the application with my twin brother, who puts on a bunch of these crazy, kind of expedition swimming races in New Zealand, like, you know, 30 and 40 K continuous swimming races, in New Zealand. And a couple that you guys know, Brent and Annie from Quest Racing, that they put on the Quest swim runs and the Odyssey swim runs up in the Northwest. So they're also expedition racers. So that was the original team. And, you know, I was like, oh, we're going to, you know, we'll go in and do this and probably somehow survive, kind of drawing on all our strengths. And then it just so happens that, you know, within a couple months of the race, maybe 3 or 4 months of the race, all of them had to pull out. So my brother had to, you know, drop out. And then Brent and Annie, who have a newborn baby, or I guess like a 1-year-old now, they were just like, it's too much. And so I was kind of left standing with this idea of still wanting to do the race, but not having a team. And yeah, I think it's a hard thing to go into a race like this without people that you know. And I just kind of started putting feelers out. And Bend is a town of elite athletes. And I met Chris, and then, you know, I know Renee. I didn't know Renee swims. I know she's an elite athlete, and I know Timothy had done the Expedition Oregon race. So it just kind of started to happen. And I ended up kind of being more in the, you know, the navigator, captain role, and knew these guys were all elite athletes. And so that's, you know, that's how the initial team went from falling apart to being reformed with a team of full Bend athletes to go over there.
Awesome. And representing Bend Racing out there. So that's also pretty,
yeah, exactly.
Pretty cool.
You know, to me, it was fun. I remember my first meeting with Chris. He was the first one I met with. And, you know, he was this elite runner, you know, amazing swimmer, but you'd never done a race longer than like 3 hours or 6 hours or something like that, Chris?
Yeah, like 2 hours and 40 minutes or something is my longest I've been racing, you know, just a marathon or trail race. It's a good I've never done a swim run and never raced over 3 hours leading into this. So
amazing.
Wow.
But it's a credit to the trailer, right? Like, I think Chris has a long career coming, hopefully, in these ultra endurance events, because I know you took one look at the trailer and was like, I don't know, but this has got to happen, right?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, Jason reached out to me the week I actually had a stress fracture from running.
Oh no.
So I was like, well, I'm in the pool a lot. So I was in like a mindset of I'm going to be swimming a lot. So that's part of that helped. Like, I hadn't been swimming much before that.
So I'm curious though. So, you know, before we get how the pitch went for Timothy and Renee, Jason, but it's like, I'd love to hear in your mind where you're like, okay, well, I'm going to go to Renee. I'm going to be like, all right, so there's this race in Sweden. It's 200K of running, 50K of swimming. Like, how do you, oh, you're breaking up for a second. Like, how are you having these conversations with people?
I mean, so I've like Renee and I have orbited around each other's circles. We go to her recovery place. My wife and I are good friends with her. We've always known how tough she was. We just never, honestly, like, we never thought of her as a swimmer. We never thought of her as a mountain biker. She probably didn't either, honestly. But we just know that she doesn't quit and she's one of the toughest athletes, when she decides to do something. And at this point, like, I'm not going to lie. Like, I was desperate. Like, I wanted to go to Sweden. You know, Thomas, basically when you applied and you got in, he's like, you got to have alternates because we don't want teams falling apart. Like, this is a big deal. Like, we're only letting in so many teams. We really don't want to like let people in and not have teams. And so I had originally had some alternates, or, you know, had a team with my brother and Brent and Annie, and thought we got this really good team. And then, just like Thomas said, like, shit happens, right? This is a big commitment. And so then I was left really, you know, I initially thought about canceling or just telling Thomas, honestly, like, we can't do it. But I knew how much he had invested in this dream to do this crazy expedition swim run. And so I really wanted to get a team over there. And at the end of the day, you know, when you start thinking it, like, I'm not going to say that any of the people on my team initially was like my dream team putting this together, but it was so cool to see how they just came forward and, you know, we'll talk more about it. Like, Timothy, with all his crazy planning and training, and he kind of like became the like logistics dream lead. Like, I don't know, like the, whatever the doctor is in the X-Men that like can plan everything and figure everything out, and the gear and the training and all that stuff.
That was a beast.
Came together. And Renee is just the person that Renee is the beast that like was terrified, I'm sure, of the swimming part. But, you know, like, if I had to have a pinch hitter in an expedition adventure race team, Renee is always going to be the first person I called. I like have called her now. We had a teammate drop out of racing national championships for adventure racing. And I think I called Renee up 6 days beforehand and said, can you do it? And, you know, she couldn't. So we ended up with somebody else. But like, she's, even though she freaking would have been terrified mountain biking off the top of Mammoth Mountain, but like, she can do it. So Renee is never going to quit. And once she sets her mind to something. So, I mean, I think when I pitched it to you, Renee, or when Chris came to you too, right, and said, hey, Renee swims. So I think she had double pressure from both Chris and I.
She can swim.
I think most people don't know I can swim. Although Chelsea, I taught her how to swim, if you go way back, before she did the Spartan Games. But I haven't swam in like 10 years. So I think Chris told me about it here, but Jason was the first person to approach me. I hadn't even thought about it. And I would say, I think I had a moment of temporary insanity at the time. When you're like, how do they talk you into it? I'm like, I don't even know if there was much talking in. I think I literally was like, let's go. And then later I was like, wait, what did I just say yes to? And Jason's really good at, as you can probably tell, like, even in his interviews, like, I don't know, he's not like false at all. Like, he'll say how awful it's going to be, but somehow he makes it sound awesome. Like, I don't know how, it's like some kind of skill where I'm like, yeah, awful, awesome, let's do it. And yeah, that's what happened. And then Tim, I've raced with before. And so Tim got brought into the fold when we found out he could swim as well. And I think all of us didn't know any of us swam before that. Like, I had just met Chris and I didn't know he swam at all. I didn't. Yeah. So I think it just like, I think that was like a hidden talent that all of us had.
Nice. Tim, what's your origin story into the One Water Race team?
My origin story is a random text from Renee saying, no context, no nothing. Hey, can you swim? Question mark.
Oh, wow. Okay. No 50K in there, though? Just swimming in general? Okay. That is a little deceiving, I will say.
Yeah. And I believe my reply was, I don't sink. So, and then, you know, I saw the trailer and I started to learn more. And I mean, it was interesting because I think after you've done a couple longer events and adventures, like similar or in the similar vein, something like this doesn't scare me. It's more of like this really cool problem to solve. And especially if you put together an amazing team, it can really be magical. So I was honestly really excited right from the beginning. Yeah.
That's awesome. So Jason, you have your team together. Did you guys have like start trying to train together? Did you just start crushing mad yards in the pool? Like what did, when you started realizing, okay, this thing's actually going to happen, what did you guys do to try to get prepared physically for this thing?
I think, you know, Tim and Chris were able to get together and train the most. You know, it was, you know, pretty crazy for me. Like I had a insane schedule. I did a 1,000 mile paddling race within leaving for like 2 weeks before leaving for Sweden. I did an expedition adventure race literally 6 or 7 days before leaving for Sweden. So my schedule was insane. I was swimming. I didn't get to meet up with these guys, but I have a canal right behind my house, which you're not supposed to go into, but it's fast enough that it's the perfect really cold treadmill, like swimming treadmill. So I was in there all the time and just like literally running, you know, laps on the canal and doing that. I think Chris and Tim were doing basically the same thing in the Deschutes River. Right? We don't have like these big expanses that we're close enough to get to. I don't know if Renee trained swimming at all. No, I know she did a little bit. But really, you know, I think Tim and Chris were kind of solving the problems of how to tow and gear. I was just trying to survive my pretty robust race schedule, and I think Renee was doing a bunch in there. I think we never had the four of us together actually until we got to Sweden, right?
All four, yeah. No, us three, the 3 weeks before, we put in some serious time. Last minute training for me. He probably nailed it. I hadn't put much swimming in. I did a little bit initially with Tim and Chris. They were really leading the ball. And I told them when I went to Peru to lead a running camp, and I stayed in Peru for about 3 weeks. I came back and I was like, I'm going to need help. Like, we need, if you want me to be swimming, we need to like go. And so they both, like, people just met me even randomly. I got some other swim people to meet me as well, and I got less scared of the swim during that process, because I did grow up swimming, so like I have good form, and it just took some time to get it back and then get comfortable. And but all four of us together, I think our first swim was actually in Sweden.
Nice.
Yeah.
And were you guys training sort of, for lack of a better word, like swimming? So with like paddles and a buoy and things like that, or were you just crushing yards like you would in college or something?
Yeah, no, I'll shout out Tim for really leading the charge on the whole swim run. Like, Tim would send out texts every week with our morning schedule, and we were trying to work on the transitions. We knew it wasn't just going to be a lot of swimming and a lot of running, but like, We had this lap downtown Bend that was like a K of running and a K of swimming each way that we just do on repeat to work on transitions and test out all the gear, and Tim doing a lot of the DIY, leading the charge on the training and the gear.
Nice.
I'll let Tim take over there.
Yeah. You know, I think right as soon as we understood what the challenge would be, we recognized that we really needed to get some good kilometers on our shoulders with paddles and learn about pull buoys. And you know, we all wanted to get the big fancy arc keel pluses and all that stuff. But then also like swimming together, the three of us tethered, How does that work? So we figured out some really cool things there. But yeah, as Chris said, you know, we've got the Deschutes River. And so as soon as it was warm enough for us to kind of bear it, we were all three of us, Chris, Renee, and I were down there. I would show up at 5:30. Chris would show up at 6:30. Renee's not a morning person, but she would show up 7:30-ish. And we'd try and get laps in. And we've got this little, literally run 1K upstream, swim 1K downstream. And we just do that over and over and over again to get those transitions, to get that thermal cycling, because we knew that that would be the biggest issue. And we were all confident that we'd show up athletically fit. But we knew that for the one water, there would be these other challenges that we'd have to figure out together. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, that's what we've talked to a few other adventure teams, and swimming isn't a large component of most adventure races, it seems like. So that's kind of been a uncovered area for some of the like more pure adventure race teams that we've talked with. And that's kind of the sense that we're getting from you all. The thing that I would think would be, obviously, besides the lot of volume of running and swimming, is the sleep bit is something that I personally not had any experience with, but you all being adventure races, it seems like no big deal for you all to deal with that. Was the longevity of the race a kind of a non-issue for you?
Well, I would say sleep depth was the hardest thing of the entire race, along with cold. And I think Jason and Tim have the most experience with that versus Chris and I, since I only have one ever experience with sleep death. Yeah, I think that's something that's makes it unique with swimming involved. But I will say, you don't want to fall asleep while you're swimming. So that part was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. You gotta be pretty tired if that's happening.
I was just going to say that was, you know, I think that was one of the things that you know, next year or, you know, each time you kind of learn about that. And that was one of the cool things and the challenging things, is to see, you know, Renee and Chris, who have less experience with that sleep deprivation. You know, I know Tim has a bunch. You know, for me, that's a bit of a non-issue, because I've done 60 or 70 of these big expedition races where it's all about sleep deprivation. But it was interesting for me because I wasn't swimming. So I'm sitting, you know, I'm on the boat doing a lot of the navigation and the nutrition and all that kind of stuff. And then I only get to see them when they're zombies, you know, and so that became yeah. a kind of cool thing for me. Usually I'm on the inside of that and also sleep deprived, and it was really cool. Like, I didn't get much sleep on the boat, but I certainly got more sleep than they did. And so it was really unique for me to be part of a team, but also on the outside trying to figure out the best way to manage it. And I definitely learned a lot that I'm going to take to future races. And, you know, both when I'm racing and something else like this. But yeah, that does become, you know, I think there can be an overemphasis on this idea of fitness. And the fitness only goes so far, and especially because we were all coming in super fit. And so the challenges became, like Tim said, the logistical parts of the gear, the management, the transitions, and then, you know, having a cohesive team strategy to deal with sleep deprivation. And that, right. You know, that becomes the crux of these races, is the sleep deprivation.
Mm. Now, again, you're super experienced, Jason. Did you have any trepidation thinking, okay, this is the first year race. Yep. Looks like there's a lot of production value going in, but I know when we spoke with Rob from the Australian team, Rob Preston from the Australian team, he was like, first year races, you kind of never know what's going to happen. But you know, once they got there, they were like, they felt really reassured. Did you guys have a similar experience?
I mean, you know, as a race director, you know, I've put on a bunch of these big races, and I personally just had a quick email chat with Thomas and talk to a bunch of people that know Thomas, that, you know, are part of the Northern Islands expedition races and Stefan and knew other people involved. So you're never quite sure how amazing it was going to be, because this turned out to be just such a phenomenal event. We're really lucky to have been a part of it. But, you know, for me personally, I had enough connections in that world that I knew that it was going to pull off. But yeah, it's a scary thing to fly halfway around the world and train and put all your eggs in this new expedition basket that we weren't even sure was going to be possible.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And then, so it sounds like the moment you got to Sweden, you all threw your gear on and linked up your tether three ways. What was some of the main things you were focusing on in those few days you had before when you got to Sweden, and then before you had to go to the race hotel host area?
Yeah, I mean, I'll talk a little bit about that. I think from my perspective, we were pretty confident in our gear. The one outlier, I think, was the amount of neoprene that we actually brought with us. So, you know, we certainly came to learn that we could have done a little bit better. And just in terms of some of the longer swims, night swims, a little bit more neoprene. But, you know, I think we were really confident in how we had dialed our gear. We had this really cool system where we could actually switch the front two swimmers. So we had this running tether that allowed for switching during drafting on the longer swims. So what I was really interested in was experiencing the map and then comparing that to the actual land that we'd be on. So from a navigation standpoint, spending some decent time out actually in the forest, on the rocks, on the islands, kind of just making a connection with the map. That was really my main focus prior to the race.
You were leading all the navigation and the orienteering then, Tim?
Yeah, on the land. And then Jason was doing the, kind of the high-level strategy and the navigation as the team captain, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'd say we wanted to test just getting in and out of the water on those rocks, because all of our transitions were kind of on dirt riverbanks. Much
yeah.
And also,
hey, we're right there with you on that.
Yeah, that was, so we spent a little bit of time testing that out the day before. Everyone was saying it's like a really warm water year. And then we hopped in the water and like, this is freezing. So I don't know if we were just like, it was colder where we were swimming, or I don't know who said it was a warm water year.
And I think it was the first time I even put on my thicker wetsuit, which Tim had just made for me, because I'm kind of small. No one can see me here, but I think I was the smallest in the entire race, and it was hard for me to find wetsuits in my size last minute. And so Tim actually, I found one at a secondhand store, and he like added a zipper in the front, and I only got it when I was there. So my first time in it was the day before the race. So like things like that were happening too.
Yes, Tim was tagging us on those Instagram posts, and it was just warming Chris and I's heart every time. I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. I love
right.
We part of like, yeah, it's like the DIY aspect is kind of so rooted with this sport. So we really enjoyed that. I was like, oh, this guy's going crazy in his garage. Love it. Love it.
Well, you're always welcome to come visit the Tinker Shed if you're up here in Bend.
We'll bring some goodies.
Yeah, we'll have to bring some stuff to Frankenstein together. It'd be fun.
Perfect. Anytime.
Nice. Cool. And how were kind of the nerves and everyone's general feelings before the race got started off? How were you all feeling day before, morning of? How was it?
I think after going into a big taper, and I think I used this word, I felt springy, which was, it just felt like energetic. Just the whole vibe was very just like high energy, excited, and sort of just raring to go. And we had the whole day on Monday, to prep. And so there's a little bit of like, okay, let's go. But then, Tuesday morning, there was just a ton of excitement, and it was, ready to go.
And so you're going into this race. If you guys talked about, okay, what do we think we can do? Did you have some sort of time goal? Did you have or what were sort of your goals going into it before the race started?
Our goal, I think, was purely to finish. We had no idea. You know, a first year race, I think you have no idea what the times, if anyone's even going to be able to make the cutoffs or whatnot. So our goals were sort of around the cutoffs. For the most part, and trying to stop Renee from trying to win the race in the first hour.
I was waiting for someone to do that. Like, I feel like the whole first day was calming me down.
There, the starting line, pretty small starting line, Tim and I just like tethered Renee, just like, no.
Yeah. Like, and I think they're tethering me so I can pull. And then we start and they're like, no, we tethered you so you couldn't run.
I love it.
So we get an early peek into the strategy of the race to start, at least. But yeah, it looked like amazing weather conditions that you all had to start. So was there a gun? The race starts, the gun goes off, proverbial gun potentially. And how did besides Renee trying to sprint out like a jackrabbit out of the box, how did it all start for y'all?
I mean, that's what happened pretty much. We had very calm leadership from both Jason and Tim. I struggled with it a little bit, but I reined myself in. We just kind of got into a groove. We did decide on that really long swim, which I think gave us good information, but definitely taught us that we were getting cold even early on with that 3.5K swim. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like figuring out as a team. I think since none of us had ever done anything like that before, even though we'd practiced a little bit of transitions, this added a whole nother level of communication.
Yeah, I'd love to hear more about, What was that communication like? You guys thinking on your feet, being like, all right, we're going to adjust the course a little bit, maybe try to get a little bit more, run more on this island that's coming up instead of swimming to warm up and stuff like that? Or what was, love to get a sense of what that thought process was, how it was going down.
I mean, the initial, you know, because we kind of were lacking a bunch of information about the wetsuit. So that initial swim was, you know, really to see how, especially Renee was going to do with the warmth. We knew she had two wetsuits. And you know, a lot of people there were talking about, like we said, how warm the water was. And you know, comparatively, and Renee just, you know, had only swam in the river in shorter distances. So we really kind of needed to see how she was going to handle the longer distances, not so much physically, like could she do them, but just with the cold and whether that was going to be a good choice or not a good choice. We also knew that, you know, even though the transitions had been practiced, even like in our two, we did little two swim runs to practice during the 2 days beforehand. Mm-hmm. And we realized very quickly how much more challenging the transitions were on those rocks. Right. And a lot of scrambling around. It's one thing to get in and out of the water at a beach that, you know, and you can speed that up when every transition is different and you're climbing out. So we got a lot of good information those first 2 days. And then a lot of it was adapting. And after that first 4K swim, we're like, all right, we're going to try to not ever swim that long again until the last swim. And then it also let us, you know that we, as soon as the weather started to get a little colder, that it was worth taking the time to put the warmer wetsuits on. And, you know, we were, you know, right at the place where we stopped, we were already ready that Renee was probably going to have to swim in both wetsuits for anything longer, just to kind of keep her warm. We had heating pads. So it just kind of gave the team and me a good sense of how to adapt the route. And we changed it again, honestly, like after that first day, when I started to see how slow the transitions were becoming, especially if I met them, you know, you see this a lot in big expedition races. As soon as you walk in and there's somebody else to talk to, like you want to talk to them or you want to do things. And so we started even adapting later on, you know, 36 hours in, where the boat would be there, but I wouldn't meet them at every point that we could, because if they had no option but to like go into the water and swim and come out and, you know, get food 2 hours in, they were really good. Like as a team, man, they were really, really strong and communicative together. And then sometimes I found that I would get in the way, right? It's like having that new energy in there could be beneficial every couple hours, but it didn't need to be there after a 500 meter swim and after a 2K run across an island. So we learned a lot, you know, for future races like this. We definitely learned a lot about ways that we can up the performance and up the teamwork and stay warmer. Right. So that's a big piece of it.
That's a really fascinating dynamic. You know, you're doing the race with them, but you're up ahead. You hadn't seen them for a certain bricks of time. You don't know how they're all doing, what beyond, you know, the time it took them to cover the distance. For the feet on the ground, Chris, Tim, and Renee, how was that? You know, getting, sounds like sometimes it was like a surge of energy to see Jason, and other times it was like a little bit of a carrot trick for y'all.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I think you don't notice until Jason says it. We're like, oh yeah, I guess we were talking to you for 5 minutes there. I should have been swimming instead. But no, it certainly felt like we got more and more into our rhythm of like, you know, there was an ideal distance for us, you know, swimming for 15 minutes, running for 15 minutes, like that sort of time span was like, felt a lot more efficient looking back than anything shorter or anything long. We like found a rhythm as a team, especially into like the end of the first night and into the second day, I thought.
Yeah, I would ditto that part. I was struggling with how long the transitions were taking. So I started cracking the whip. Actually, I don't know if the other two felt that. But that's actually probably one of the things I practiced really well was the transitions. So like I was like ready to go and I would jump in the water and then I'd end up standing in the water for a little bit. And I was getting really cold. So which I'm sure we're going to talk about at some point, or we've already kind of brushed on it, as my biggest weakness in the race was cold. They were very patient with me if I snapped at all. And I thank you guys. I don't even know if I've said that yet to you guys. So
that's what this show's all about. It's all about promoting healing. And,
yep. Us and Maury Pulvich.
I was like, we got to go. Like, I'm cold.
Yeah. So I'd love to hear, you know, obviously you guys did not have a successful campaign on the first year. Would love to hear, you know, and whatever detail you want to share, kind of where it started going sideways and, you know, what made that decision to kind of pull the plug on it.
This is the fun part. Who wants to talk about
like it's going to be the emotional part.
This is the real talk.
I got to see a different perspective than these guys, obviously. You know, so I know that my perspective is only kind of so valuable from the outside. This is good. This is like, we've talked about all getting together once we got home, and we haven't done that because we've all been all over the place. So it's like live on the podcast.
But that's actually not the first time that's happened on our show, believe it or not. So it's kind of a thing for us.
It's an exclusive,
you know, and these guys did great. And I think they're the only team that basically didn't finish the race that made all the cutoffs except for the finish line. Right. So that was an interesting, you know, interesting thing. Like, and it becomes a bit of that question of, you know, some of the decisions I think were kind of made and, you know, everybody felt a little differently and everybody got a chance to kind of think about. The team was definitely hurting when they dropped out. Like there was, they'd made the cutoff. They were pretty sleep deprived. There was kind of a lot of unknowns. And I think that's always a hard thing to do, especially with a team that doesn't have that depth. Like this is the first time any of the four of us, except for Renee and Tim, had ever raced together, and they'd only raced together, you know, a few times. And so this is a big undertaking. I mean, this is a huge race, a lot of unknowns. And, you know, the easy way to say it is the team probably didn't have the depth required at the moment to like parse this, you know, having 2 or 3 hours ahead of the cutoff, but also having had a really, really, really slow pace those last 10 or 15K, a lot of, you know, cold, sleep deprivation, probably dehydration, lack, you know, like all kinds of things. And, you know, at the end of the day, it was a beautiful beach. And there was just that kind of decision that in my mind, there just wasn't quite enough of that depth of understanding and, you know, not even trust is the right word, but that kind of what it feels like to make that decision to keep going. And I think, you know, I really think that with the team makeup and with the experience and with the stuff going on, that it was the right decision because everybody was happy, you know, with how far they had come. And it was, you know, kind of that decision to, you know, to call it. And again, like from my perspective, it was a bit painful, but I also wasn't in, like, I'm been sitting on the boat, you know, just not being able to drink coffee, which was the weirdest rule, but at some other point, but like, you know, really being proud of these guys and how far they'd come and how they kept overcoming and making the cutoff and doing all that stuff. So, you know, I just wanted to support them in the decisions that they made. So that's where I'm from. And it's like really cool that now that they've had time to think about it, like I'm really excited to hear, you know, their thoughts.
I mean, I don't know if I should talk next. I think Jason did a really good job just then. That was perfect. It was in the end a little heartbreaking, but I also think like our team did the call that was at the time probably the best call. I mean, it's hard to know. I was really out of it. We were slow the last, it was hard for me. I'm not going to lie. That was probably the hardest moment. I've been going through a lot in my personal life at the same time. So I really wanted to finish, like this ridiculous need to finish, even though I was the one that was hurting the most at the time. The cold really got to me in that last night. There's a lot of things I learned during it that I would change. I remember Chris and Tim and Jason, I don't remember who said it beforehand, that a tip, a couple weeks before, there was a tip that went out and it said put on more adipose tissue as opposed to training more. And I was like, well, that ship sailed for me. My body fat's 6% right now. That's not going to help us at all.
You could have called me. I would have given you some of mine.
I'm 104 pounds right now and very vascular. So it was, I knew that would probably be what I thought, that thicker wetsuit was going to do it. But when I saw what other people had and what I wish I had, and then I didn't ever take off the gloves and they were full of water because I was just like all about go, because that's the type of racing I normally do, is like you don't really stop. You just like go, 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 and you're at all full tilt. So I had a lot of learning to do myself. I got very emotional the whole last, is that 4 miles-ish to go when we really slowed down a lot. I was probably working out at a level 2-3 the whole time. So I had some moments of the sleep depth and cold already, but I battled through them. So I was pretty disappointed in myself, and my teammates all know that I really am hard on myself. So that was probably hard for them to watch, to be honest. I'm going to give them a lot of grace here because I luckily couldn't see it happening. I was pretty hard on myself coming in because I was pretty upset that I was the one that couldn't go fast all of a sudden. My knees were like grapefruits and I was like half awake and I was really cold. But I was really determined to get to that time. So we forged ahead. I think Chris held my hand at one point, which I was a little bit like, don't hold my hand. But then I was like, yes, please hold my hand. It was like this like weird moment where I wanted like connection, but also wanted to be really tough. So I was like, give me tough love. Don't baby me. It got pretty emotional. So when we actually got to the beach, before we got to the beach and before we saw Jason, I thought we weren't going to make the time cutoff. So I started bawling like crazy because I thought we were going to miss the time cutoff. But we made it with a few hours actually. Then I started bawling again because we had a chance. And then I just started focusing on myself and wanted us to wait to make decisions. But I also know I was not okay at the time. And so I really am glad I have a team that cares about me a lot. So,
yeah.
In that sense, I'm really happy to have a really team that like values my welfare. But I was the one vote that wanted to continue going, which I actually can't believe I.
Well, to add a little context, right? So this is what was interesting. You know, we talked about the race, and it was a first time race. So there were definitely a number of things that could be improved. You know, somebody's probably talked about the tracking, which was interesting because the tracking just totally failed. And so Tim, thank God we had Tim on the ground, because we'd have to make a plan sometimes like miles and miles away, like the boat's going to meet you here. Right. And we have no idea where they are because the tracking is gone. Right. And so, and sure enough, like an hour later, Tim like literally walks to the exact point down the beach. Right.
Nice.
And the only time that didn't happen was when they were sleep deprived and they were supposed to come out on this island. And for some reason, we hadn't had tracking for 15 hours. The awesome boat captain on me is like, oh, we don't have tracking. And occasionally he's checking in. And the like the only sleep deprivation craziness was like, the tracking came up and we saw Tim's little dot or the team's dot going the wrong way once they hit the shoreline of the island. And so like all of a sudden we know where they are. We know they're nowhere near us. And we zoom up there as they like wander into some lady's house, which was an awesome, you know, close to some lady's house. Like that was this one moment, but the rest of it, we had no tracking. And then as we're getting close to the cutoffs, it was really unclear. Like on the map, there's a thing that says cutoff at this time, and it's right across from checkpoint 11. And then we get word that the cutoff is at checkpoint 12, right? And so this was a hard thing because like the team is like on pace to rest and to make checkpoint 11 with plenty of time. And then all of a sudden we're told that the cutoff is checkpoint 12, and there's no way we're going to make that because it's another 6 or 8 hours away. I tell the team this, and that's what Renee was talking about, like this devastation of like, oh my God, we've been working so hard. And now we thought the checkpoint 11 was the cutoff, but now they've told us absolutely it's checkpoint 12. And then while they're out there running this, what I can only imagine was this, like their final stage, their sad goodbye of like, we're missing the cutoff. It's over, right? We get a text that, oh, sorry, it's actually checkpoint 11, but we have no way to contact them, tell them this. And so they're racing into checkpoint 11 thinking they've missed the cutoff. And so, you know, I can only imagine from my experience, like there's times when that emotional context of like that the race had already been decided for them. So I know that, you know, somewhere in Renee and Chris and Tim's head is this like, we did our best, like, and we're so sad that we missed the cutoff, right? And they're just falling apart. And so then all of a sudden they come in, you know, and they're like, hey, you actually made the cutoff. And there's just so much when you're sleep deprived and that emotional energy is kind of hard back. To come.
So before we hear from Chris and Timothy, Jason, I would love just to understand that a little bit more because you've done a ton of these races. Like when we spoke with Daniel Hansen and Kristen Larson, and they were saying how like you really have to find this place emotionally where you don't get too high, too low, where you can just process and just keep moving forward. When you're getting this type of information, I mean, can it just, especially when you're sleep deprived, like explain to me like how easy things can just fall apart?
Right. I mean, sleep deprivation basically strips away, you know, all our rationale, all our filters. And so we become these base emotions and we can't control them. We can't filter them. And so the lows are so low, the highs are so high. It's almost like being manic. And so when you've put your heart into something, I've been in this space in races before where there's miscommunications or misunderstandings between the racers and the organization or what you're going for. And, you know, it's no discredit. It's just that, you know, like I'm sure next year, everything's going to be much more clear. Cause like, why wasn't there an exact checkpoint that was the cutoff? It just wasn't there. We're interpolating from the map. And so these racers that are going super hard and putting everything out there, planning, you know, hours in advance, when the rest is, when they're going to push hard to make these cutoffs with plenty of time, all of a sudden to have that taken away from them, right? And basically be put up against an unachievable goal. And that's what it was. Like there was no way this team was going to make checkpoint 12 by the cutoff without a completely different strategy from the start. And so, you know, I think that like the body just breaks down. And one of the interesting things in all these races, like when you're sleep deprived, if you rest too long, like you can't keep going. Like the body actually goes into this, you know, hyperactive recovery mode where everything hurts super intense, right? So you have to mitigate little rests and continuous motion. And so emotionally, when you have this idea that, oh, well, we're done, right? And then all of a sudden somebody says, oh, actually, guess what? You can keep going. It's just going to hurt so much more now because somewhere in your subconscious, the body has already learned that it's going to stop, you know, which is just tough. And you know, we were really, you know, it was a really touch and go with whether we were going to be able to pull that out and keep going. And you know, I think, you know, it teaches us a lot for next year, but the emotional, like this, you know, I think any of the top athletes will tell you, yeah, once you're at a certain physicality and a certain endurance and a certain fitness, these races are all emotional, right? Mm-hmm. And not just personally emotional, but relationship emotional. It's like, how can you spend your relationship collateral, your sleep collateral, your emotional collateral in the right ways to continue moving forward when your whole brain at some point is saying like, we're done. Right. And that's, these guys did an amazing job.
It's insane. It's insane. Chris, Timothy, we'd love to hear a little bit more from you guys. Like, seems like you were helping Renee trying to keep moving forward. What was going on, you know, in your heads?
Yeah. So, you know, I think, just going back, Chris, Renee, and I, we spent quite a bit of time training together. And, you know, going into this, we had a really great synergy and just way of communicating. And the whole event, it felt really light and it felt like there was just this really nice energy. And we all knew what we were bringing to the team. And so, you know, the reason that I'm saying that is because we know that in these types of events, there can be moments where any of us can go through a real low or also a real high. And up until, I believe it was the island of Uto, that last beach where we stopped, you know, we were working really well together. And when Renee started to have some issues with getting cold, to me, that was the magical moment of the race where we came together and we supported each other. We got to the beach. And at the end of the day, it's just a race. And yes, it's always great to go and finish the race. But I think we all went into this with the understanding that this was more about the experience than actually getting to the finish line. The finish line is certainly the goal. But gosh, I just think back and the whole experience of those 50 hours was just incredible. And we had the opportunity actually for two people to continue. You could actually withdraw from the race and just have two of your teammates continue. But in that moment, when we were making the decision, it was so much more important to make the decision as a team. And the most important aspect is the health and well-being of each of us. And so it wasn't even an option to continue on just as two people. And so we decided to withdraw as a full team. And that to me, I think is a really cool moment to make that decision together and do it in kind of respect and honor of our health.
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah. I can
top that, Chris.
You're up now.
Yeah. I can echo that. I should have gone first on that.
Yeah.
But like Tim said, I think I really felt we were doing like crushing the race the whole way into the, you know, first night getting cold and then warming back up the second day. And then second night, we got more and more cold the second night. There's one, like, I have this really memorable leg. We ran on an island. We were running to find a radio tower. And I swear it was like 35 degrees Fahrenheit at some, it'd be like 60 degrees Fahrenheit on one hill and you go down into a valley and it would be like ice crystals and like freezing in these valleys. And I hadn't brought my coat and like Tim, we were both freezing, but Tim was giving me his coat and we were running along. That's why I was like, oh man, we are so cold right now, but we're at least like, I can't believe Tim was willing to share his coat while I could see him shaking with cold. And I was like, towards the morning of the second night, I was like, wow, we are getting cold as a team when we're all trying to share garments around and figure out who's the coldest right now and who gets that coat. So I think it just sort of as that like morning dawned, we hit Uto, like Tim said, we were really starting to slow down a lot. I think that last 10K probably took, you know, on the first day we did a 20K, I think, in like 2 hours. And then we did that last 10K in like longer than that. So we had really, but it was like Tim said, I think it was a magical moment. It's like not really a fun thing if you're just like cruising along. Like the fun in these races comes when you have to bind together as a team, I think, and help each other out. It's like Tim said, I think like even though the end wasn't satisfying to not make it all the way, it was still like an amazing experience to like get to that. We kind of set our minds on getting to that checkpoint 11 as like, we're getting there no matter what. We're not stopping. Like, you could see Renee's determination of like, I think most teams would, or like a lot of people would have stopped mid on that island and had them come pick us up. But like, I was really impressed by the team's determination to get to that final checkpoint.
I mean, it sounds like it was just an amazing experience. And like you all mentioned, obviously the goal was to finish. You know, when we spoke with Rob Preston from Team Australia, they were like, we don't even know if anyone's going to finish. They're like, they were going into it like, we don't even know if this is possible. So I think it takes a lot of bravery just to even line up and do this thing. And the fact you went out there and had an awesome experience, I mean, I think that's memorable in and of itself. But I'm curious, you guys coming back for One Water Race 2023?
Is it happens? Is it official?
I mean, I don't know if it's official, but I think they want to do it.
if it's official.
I mean, I'm pretty sure it's happening. I definitely want to go back. It was crazy because I was, you know, they talked a little bit about the day before the race, and the day the race started, like, was my saddest day, mostly because I wasn't racing. And then I was able to shift, and the best experience was, you know, for me being out of my comfort zone and like meeting the boat captains and getting this to spend time with Thomas, the race director, and like seeing how it all worked. And it turned out to be probably a really transformative experience for me, both as an athlete, the race director. So I'm really thankful that I was in that role, you know, bonding with the boat captains and the film crew. And like, I never really understood swim run, I'll be honest, before I went there. And now, like, I'm going out tomorrow morning to vet the course for Central Oregon's for a swim run. Right. So
you put that race, like, on, we'll
it's
be there.
Such a cool. Yeah. We're going to do two next summer. We're going to do one that's all river based and one that's, you know, up in these Alpine mountain lakes. So permits are already submitted to the Forest Service. So,
love it.
So, you know, it's like, it was so cool to show up in the archipelago and like finally understand, like, the first little run, team test run we did that first day in our home. I was like, oh my God, this sport is amazing. And maybe it does take showing up in Sweden and looking out there and being like, oh, I get it. Swimming and running together over distances with adventure and a team makes so much sense. So, you know, I'm super thankful to have been there and to have met Thomas and had this team there and got to, you know, got to train and connect with these guys, as a team and as athletes. I really hope it continues. You know, I'm really excited for the opportunity, hopefully to go back. I don't know, you know, and all Tim, I learned so much just from Tim tinkering. Like, I was like, I never knew somebody could solve all these problems in such a short amount of time. It was a pretty amazing experience. So yeah, I'm very pumped on swim run in general, on the team and on future possibilities.
Yeah. And I still want to win. I didn't even say that before everyone's like wants to finish. I mean, I'm pretty sure in every interview you already see it everywhere. I feel like we learned a whole bunch. I never thought I'd want to do it again, but, I fell in love with swimming again. I hadn't swam in a really long time. And I thank all my teammates for that part. There was even a moment where I swam with dark goggles at night and just like meditated while I swam. I want to keep swimming, and, the community there was amazing. I wish it could be just like a 3 to 8 hour race, but,
they have those.
Yeah. Renee, those are the ones I want to try the most.
We've got two races for you here. Two races for you right here. You don't have to go anywhere.
I love all these promos for these races in Oregon, which we need. We need more swimmer races.
Definitely need more races.
I mean, what I love that I'm hearing is, you know, one thing that we say on the show a lot is, you know, doesn't have to be a 50-hour race or whatever, but the beauty about swim run, if you're of a certain disposition, once you do that, those first couple transitions, you kind of have this moment where you get the magic of it. And Jason, it sounds like that was your experience. Chris, looks like you're going to join us in Austin for Odyssey Swim Run Austin. Do you guys all feel like you want to do swim runs now and kind of understand the sport a little bit more?
I definitely do. I'm primarily a runner. So whenever running's a big focus, I really like it even more. But my second sport is swimming. So even though a lot of people didn't know that beforehand. So I haven't even done triathlons because of the biking, not the swimming, which is most people's, usually it's the swimming. So I am, yeah. I'm stoked about it, finding this sport, and I learned so much, and the gear is so important. So, which is new to me, that part. So it's a big learning curve, but I think we learned a lot and got thrown into the deep end literally, yeah. right away.
Yeah. Your first swim run was the longest swim run ever. Like literally.
That's true.
That's yeah, bend right. racing, right? We just go big.
Yeah. Amazing.
Well, I mean, there's a purity, right? So like, you know, yeah, swim run right now is it's going through kind of this DIY phase with gear and different rules and all that kind of stuff. But to me, what appeals to it is at the end of the day, it's there's a purity in that you don't find even in adventure racing, right? It's possible to explore with just your body, right? So whether you have a wetsuit or, you know, like you can look at the swim run in its purest form and it just human locomotion over terrain. And yep. I think I got captured by that, this idea that, yeah, it'd be nice if it's not so cold or whatever, but it doesn't take anything except, you know, a human body or a pair of human bodies exploring the terrain and deciding when to swim and deciding when to run. So even going out and training and finding courses or just this idea of it, is, you know, like I'm trying to convince my brother to come and do a swim run through the boundary waters like we used to canoe. I know people have probably done that. I'm like, how cool. Put the little buoy on your back and do a 5-day swim run across the boundary. Maybe there'll be one water race USA and it'll be in the boundary waters or the Ketico. Like, who knows? Like maybe we're seeing the beginning of this new crazy expedition swim run. And it's just so fun in that purity and exploration.
I love it. I love it. And I mean, I love the way that you're describing, you know, the whole thing, because yeah, I mean, Chipper and I, when people ask, oh yeah, it's kind of like amphibious trail running, but I love the idea of thinking of it as like just human locomotion over terrain, because that's really what it is. And as you mentioned, you can pretty much, anyway, I need to stop.
Chris was sold on swim run.
I feel like I'm the chief evangelist of swim run here, so I'll stop. But I guess I'm really glad that you guys had an amazing experience. I'm glad that you're super stoked on swim run. I'd love to hear sort of lastly, you know, we talked about a little bit of sort of, you know, how the race was organized and all that stuff. But if there's anything for next year that you guys think that you're definitely going to do different in training, you know, kind of what are you thinking yeah. like in terms of prepping for this thing again?
I mean, I know I'm going to have more layers. That's a given. And then I probably not even wear my wetsuit in some of our swims so that I can get used to being really cold. And some longer distance, where I'm in the water a little bit longer. And then I was always running after I got out. And then on these ones, you end up hiking a lot more. So like I wasn't warming up hiking. And so I would probably prepare for that a little bit more as opposed to, because I always ran when I got out, and that wasn't, when you're doing a multi-day thing, that's not always practical. And you have the conditions, like on some of it, you're like scrambling. So I think I would have done a little bit more of like, I know now to prepare for being cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, honestly, we had the physical fitness and we had what it took or what it would take to finish it. I think we just, we didn't have the right neoprene. And I'm just going to say, you know, what's interesting is we ran into Adriel in the hotel lobby. And I don't know if Chris, you or Renee remember this, but he had this big, huge cardboard box. And I said, Adriel, what are you doing with the cardboard box? And he said, oh, I'm sending back wetsuits. So they raided the ARC demo wetsuit.
The van.
And so they had dry wetsuits to put on every time they changed wetsuits. And so, you know, I think just looking back on it, we just did not have the right neoprene on hand, either, you know, just the total neoprene kit or, you know, the spares and whatnot to keep us warm for those nights and those longer swims. So I think, you know, I wouldn't really change much about our training plan. I would continue to refine our gear.
Gotcha. Interesting. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you guys, we're super proud of you guys representing US. Job. I mean,
and the West Coast, the best coast, as we
The West Coast for sure, for sure. West is the best. Thank you guys so much for taking the time and give us your race report. Let us know how it went. I'm glad that we were able to get everyone in the room. This is the biggest interview
we're setting
in terms of per people. Yeah, the most we've ever had
continuously interviewed.
So we did it. So thank you guys so much. Chris, we'll see you in Austin in a month and a half or so.
Gonna happen.
Yeah.
And yeah, good luck with the rest of your year in training, and just thank you again so much for coming on and sharing your story with us.
Great. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Of course.
This is awesome.
Thanks
guys.
All.
All right, cheers.
Cheers.
Bye. Take care. All
right. Bye.
Take care, you guys. Bye-bye.
Well, that's it for this week's episode. Thanks so much for listening to the show. Make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and leave a review, since that's the best way to help other people discover the show and the sport of swim run.
Sign up for a newsletter at lowtideboys.com. That's boys with a Z. And check out our meme page at the Low Tide Boys on Instagram. If you have any suggestions for the show or questions for us, send us a DM or an email at lowtideboys@gmail.com.
We'd like to thank Riding Easy Records for our show music, and of course our wives for their support and tolerance of all our swim run activities, podcast, and other stuff.
Yeah, other stuff.
Other
way
stuff.
To, way to keep it PG. Finally, you can support our efforts on Patreon. Until next time, get out there and go for a swim.
Go for a run.
Then another swim.
Then another run.
And then another swim.
And then another run.
And then just keep going. Until you're done.
Until you're done. Or maybe can't stop all stuff.